Thank you, Jonga, and blessing. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Wednesday, August 26th, 2015. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Chris Gande.
And I'm Jonga Kandemiri.
Here are our top stories this evening.
The World Food Program launches a $56 million appeal to raise funds to feed about 850,000 of the estimated 1.5 million Zimbabweans facing starvation this year.
The World Food Program will be starting food distributions and, where possible, where market conditions allow, also giving cash or vouchers to those most in need so that they're able to procure their own food stocks to get them through the lean season.
Bulawayo residents thronged the streets in their thousands to bid farewell to the late Warriors and Highlanders Football Club legend Willard Maui Kumalo.
Today, we went and collected his body from the parlor, and we'll take the body to home. We are going to lay to rest for tonight, and then we are going for a church service tonight.
And some Bulawayo-based Mandela Washington Fellowship fellows share experiences with potential young African leaders initiative candidates.
These stories and much more coming up. Stay tuned.
The World Food Program has launched a $56 million appeal to feed about 850,000 of the estimated 1.5 million Zimbabweans facing starvation this year. The UN agent says it has also noted an unusually high number of Zimbabwean children with stunted growth, meaning the children are too short for their age. The WFP shockingly noted that 56% of all children between the ages of 6 and 5 years, I think, Chris, it's 6 months and 5 years, suffered from anemia in the country. The cash-strapped Harare has put Vice President Emmerson Mnangagwa in charge of the food crisis. Mnangagwa has assured the nation no one will starve. But several letters written to Studio 7 by listeners indicate that the food situation in the country is getting desperate. WFP Communications Officer for Southern Africa, David O, tells Studio 7's Blessing Zulu that the food crisis situation is developing in Zimbabwe.
There is a developing food security crisis in Zimbabwe, largely as a result of a failed harvest in April of this year. The yield was down about 50% on last year, following very erratic weather, particularly drought conditions in the south of the country, which during the growing season, which really impacted the maize harvest. So that is the main reason for the situation that is developing now.
So how much do you plan to raise to assist those who are facing starvation in Zimbabwe?
Well, an assessment was done following the harvest. According to the data collected, it is estimated that at least 1.5 million people are facing or will be facing food insecurity during the lean season. That's the months prior to the next harvest, when domestic food stocks tend to be depleted. So we're talking about sort of the latter half of this year and the early months of next year. That lean season usually starts in around November. It's begun much earlier than usual. The World Food Program will be starting food distributions and where possible, where market conditions allow, also giving cash or vouchers to those most in need so that they're able to procure their own food stocks to get them through the lean season. As I said, about 1.5 million people in need. Our aim is to try and reach about 850,000 of those people. obviously the government and other organizations, aid agencies, will be working alongside us. But the situation is severe, and I think we are going to see it getting worse as the lean season develops. Zimbabwe is just one of our operations which is facing a funding shortfall. We estimate we're going to need about $56 million to support our lean season operation from the month of September right through to March next year.
But we also understand there's been donor fatigue, not only in Zimbabwe, but in most parts of the world that are also in similar situations. Is this true?
This is absolutely true. We haven't raised all that money. In fact, we're very far short of having done so. So we're appealing to donors to step forward and help us with that operation. But as you say, it's very difficult in the current climate with so many major emergencies on around the world.
WFP Communications Officer for Southern Africa, David Orr, speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu from Harare. In recent years, food production in Zimbabwe has been devastated by a number of factors, including natural disasters and economic and political instability. Recurrent drought, a series of poor harvests, high unemployment, estimated at more than 90%, restructuring of the agriculture sector, and a high HIV/AIDS prevalence rate at 14.7%, the fifth highest in the world, have all contributed to increasing levels of vulnerability and acute food insecurity since 2001. This situation has necessitated large-scale humanitarian food relief operations in the country. But donor fatigue has hit many humanitarian appeals lately. UN agencies like the WFP have also been affected.
Soccer lovers thronged the streets in their thousands today to bid farewell to the late Warriors and Highlanders football club legend Willard Mawi Kumalo as family members and colleagues ferried his body to the family home in Mzilikazi ahead of his burial tomorrow. The late Kumalo, who died Sunday, will be buried at Lady Stanley Cemetery, a burial site for respected Bulawayo citizens who immensely contributed to the development of the city, and where his former colleagues, who include Mercedes Rambo Sibanda, Adam Adamski Ndlovu, and Benjamin Konjera, are buried. Spokesman for the Kumalo family and former Highlanders chairman Ernest Mapepa Sibanda tells reporter Thandekile Mhlanga a memorial service is being held in Mzilikazi this evening for the late Kumalo.
Today, we went and collected his body from the parlor at 1700 hours, and we'll take his body to home. We are going to lay to rest for tonight, and then we are going for a church service tonight. And then from there, we will have to rest for the burial for tomorrow morning.
And what happens tomorrow? Is the schedule still the same as the one you previously outlined?
Not really much. As I said before, that we'd like to thank our city fathers for allowing Willard to be laid to rest at the Lady Stanley Cemetery. We haven't changed anything yet, as we'll start at 8 o'clock proceeding to McDonald's Wall. We were going to church, start our church service at 8:30, and then from there followed by speeches, and from there we go via Baba Faye Stadium, and then I hope by 12 o'clock we'll be doing the burial at Lady Stanley Cemetery.
That was Ernest Mapepa Sibanda, former Highlanders chairman and spokesman for the family of the late Highlanders Football Club and Warriors striker Willard Kumalo, on the line from Bulawayo.
Meanwhile, the late senior High Court judge, Justice Andrew Mutema, who died on Friday, has been declared a national hero. According to the Herald, the announcement was made this evening by Home Affairs Minister Ignatius Chombo. He will be the first judge to be interred at the National Shrine. We will give you more details about this story tomorrow.
Some Bulawayo-based youths who participated in this year's Mandela Washington Fellowship for the Young African Leaders Initiative in the United States said they learned a lot of important things which they will start implementing in their various areas of work as a way of trying to improve things in the country. Correspondent Taurai Shava brings us more.
Speaking with Studio 7, after a meeting with some youth interested in the program in Bulawayo yesterday, Samantha Nyeremuka, one of the participants in the Young African Leaders Initiative, said their stay in the U.S. broadened their mind on disability issues as well as boosting their self-confidence. Samantha, the projects and finance officer in the King George VI Center in Bulawayo, is a person who lives with disability. She volunteers as a sign language teacher with Mpilo and United Bulawayo Hospitals and is also an interpreter at the Magistrates Court. Samantha says while at Delaware University, she learned about new ways of how to teach sign language and she will impart this new knowledge to the people she works with in the community.
One of the things I learned that is that you have to be somebody who's very patient when you want to teach sign language or when you want to help a deaf person, because they rely on me a lot and they expect to see somebody who's understanding, who is, takes themselves into their shoes and actually understand where they are coming from and where they go, what they hope to get delivered at the end of the day. I also learned that I'm not a teacher myself, but I can impart the knowledge to teachers that when they're teaching in their classroom setups, it's important for deaf children to sit in such a manner that they can see what's around them. There are no obstructions or anything, so that they use their eyes as a sense of hearing.
We'll allow a businessman, Andrew Chikomba, who sells information communication technology as well as solar products, also took part in the YALI program. Chikomba said one of the most important things he learned was the need for businesses and ordinary people to be ethical in everything they do, adding, this can assist in averting rampant corruption, which stifles development in many countries across Africa.
There's a lot of unethical practices that occur within the country and within the continent in general. It's something that is happening all over the place, but it's something that we can avoid doing. That is, we can avoid giving bribes, we can avoid taking kickbacks, we can avoid creating these bottlenecks that stifle business growth and productivity. And as long as individuals become more ethical in their practices, whether it's a profit-making business or it's a non-profit, we will thrive and the economy will grow and there will be progress and there will be productivity within our nation.
Chikomba said he had already been involved in helping the less privileged in society, but developed a better appreciation of giving back to the community and wants to start helping some youths in peri-urban areas to start up their own businesses by mentoring them and also giving them startup stock for sale.
We have been working with youth in rural areas and peri-urban areas through SNV and through their solar rural project, but we want to increase our impact. So basically, over the next few weeks, over the next few months as well, we're going to be training more youth, at least 60 to 90 at a time, and we're going to be capacitating them, giving them entrepreneurial skills.
Meanwhile, YALI Network Coordinator for Africa, Paul Swider, who attended yesterday's meeting with local YALI aspirants, revealed that the United States Embassy is constructing a YALI center in Bulawayo, which is going to be one of only 10 such centers in Africa. Although Swider could not say how much it will cost, he said the center to be opened before year-end will have state-of-the-art facilities where selected youths can learn entrepreneurship and leadership skills, among other things. The YALI program is one of President Barack Obama's flagship initiatives and seeks to impart various skills in African youths who show leadership potential. Reporting for Studio 7 from Bulawayo, this is Taurai Shala.
You're listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America in Washington.
We are broadcasting on 909 Metom Wave and on the 4930, 5940 and 15460 shortwave frequencies.
On the internet, find us at www.studio7news.com.
You can also text us at 001-202-465-0318.
Coming up,
Southern Africans meet in Washington, D.C. for social networking and business opportunities.
We saw there was a gap in the need to make an awareness of the southern part of Africa. Therefore, we are promoting the culture of Southern Africa.
But first, a look at regional and international news.
U.S. officials say the number two leader of the Islamic State group has been killed in a drone strike in Iraq.
UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon travels to Nigeria on Sunday to meet the country's new president and to commemorate the anniversary of a deadly attack on the United Nations building in Abuja.
And worries about slowing economic growth in China, rising political uncertainty in Greece, and uncertainty about plans to raise U.S. interest rates shook investors and sparked a global stock sell-off on Friday.
You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America in Washington.
All is set for the annual Southern African Reunion event in USA, which will this year be held at Howard County Sports Center, where various events, including social soccer and other games, will be part of the fun. One of the organizers of the event, Sianda Masiza, says the two-day gathering will start Friday with a fashion show to be attended by a top designer from Botswana. Hundreds of people drawn from Southern African nations like Zimbabwe, South Africa, Namibia, Malawi, and Zambia are expected to attend the event that promotes a spirit of togetherness among those currently living in the United States. Masiza tells Studio 7's Gibbs Dube the event, which is convened by a non-profit organization, Southern African Community, caters for all age groups.
Friday night, we have a fashion show. Saturday, we have the soccer, picnic, and braai. And we ended off with a business breakfast on Monday.
What are your objectives here?
To promote Southern Africa. We saw there was a gap in the need to make an awareness of the southern part of Africa. Therefore, we are promoting the culture of Southern Africa. We're promoting that Southern Africans do exist within the context of the whole of Africa being represented in the U.S.
Have you actually achieved some of those goals, you know, in the past 3 years?
Yeah, we definitely have. We have great partnerships, for example, with the mayor's office of D.C. We've gotten some recognition there where they always feature any of events that we host, and we also invited to a few of their events where they highlight certain parts of Africa, as well as in terms of putting ourselves on the map of Africa within the context of America. Is a lot of other African groups, we partner up with them. Now we are more invited, more featured in a lot of their events as well.
So now, looking at some of the events that are going to be taking place, tell us a bit about the fashion show.
We have invited designers from and who live in Southern Africa. For example, we have a designer who had come in this morning from Botswana, Mutusi, and his designs are a mixture of contemporary as well as traditional Botswana and Southern Africa-themed tradition.
Let's talk about food. What types of food are you going to be serving there?
All right. We have Ayoba Meats. So they will be with us. They will be serving Boravos, as well as Biltong. And our picnic is usually a bring-your-own braai. So we always have a feature of a slew of
of different cuisines from different parts of Southern Africa. I will be bringing some pap and mosho, and I look forward to having a lot more this year. We have Tanzania coming to join us, so it will be quite interesting about how much cuisine variety we'll have.
So now, do we have any kind of charges for people to participate in the fashion show and other events?
Absolutely. The fashion show tickets right now are on sale on Eventbrite. You can get through to at www.southernafrica.com/US, and there's an Eventbrite link there. They're $25 right now. And at the door, they will be $35, including it's an all-night thing, which will also give you a pass into the after party. And also on Saturday, it's a free-for-all. You are welcome to come in at any time. There is no charge for that. You'll be enjoying soccer matches, netball matches, and a good music from home.
Right. Tell us a little bit about, you know, the kind of benefits of participating in such events.
Well, first and foremost, for me, the benefit is always to meet new faces. A lot of new faces from Southern Africa and friends of Southern Africa. We always have people who come through and to meet us, as well as not just on a fun level, but on a professional level. I've met quite a few connections and made quite a few connections in our event. It's a good event to attend.
Now, tell us where this event is going to take place.
The fashion show will be at 926 Philadelphia Avenue in Silver Spring, Maryland, and the soccer event, the Braai picnic, will be at a field out in Howard County.
That was Siyanda Masiza of a non-profit organization, a Southern African Community, speaking with Studio 7's Gibbs Dube from Washington, D.C.
Unemployment, according to new findings by the Mass Public Opinion Institute, Mpoi, haunts Zimbabweans the most as more workers continue to be sent home by hard-pressed companies. The Mpoi says, weary Zimbabweans saddled with mounting limitations to the right to employment due to industrial collapse and job losses are developing nostalgia for the bygone inclusive government, researchers said this week. Disseminating results of its post-election survey yesterday in Harare, the Mass Public Opinion Institute revealed that unemployment ranked as the most important problem that confronts the current government. 93% of Zimbabweans in urban areas and 89% of those in rural areas thought the government had failed very badly to create jobs, the findings reveal. Zimbabwe Human Rights Association, or ZIMRights, chairperson Pasmo Nyakureba said the government must urgently listen to the concerns of the people and address the macroeconomic situation and its effects on households. He said there's no doubt that the state of the economy affects the realization of socio-economic rights, such as the right to decent employment, which in turn affects citizens' ability to have adequate and dignified standards of living.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Fostering economic development in sub-Saharan Africa is a top priority of the United States, and the African Growth and Opportunity Act, or AGOA, is the centerpiece of our trade policy on the continent. Government officials, business leaders, and civil society from African countries and the U.S. are meeting in Gabon's capital, Libreville, this week to discuss how AGOA, now 15 years old, can provide even more business and investment opportunities for Africa's people today and into the future. Statistics support a growing consensus in both Africa and the United States that freer trade and increased international investment are critical to spurring economic development and reducing poverty. the U.S. Congress enacted AGOA in May 2000, providing a wide range of African products duty-free access to the U.S. market. AGOA has succeeded in helping eligible nations grow, diversify their exports to the United States, and create employment and inclusive economic growth. By 2014, African countries' non-oil AGOA exports to the United States were valued at $4.4 billion, up roughly 250% from 2001. The growth of these non-oil industries has spurred an estimated 300,000 direct jobs in beneficiary countries. AGOA's success won overwhelming bipartisan support in Congress, which this summer voted to reauthorize the program for another 10 years. That underscores our nation's commitment to a stronger U.S.-Africa trade relationship and support for the region's long-term economic growth. The new AGOA legislation has an added clause, specifically calling for the promotion of the role of women in social, political, and economic development in sub-Saharan Africa. This acknowledges the vital role that women play as economic and civic leaders across the continent. Discussions during this year's forum will explore ways to build strong, export-oriented businesses and prepare African women producers to integrate more fully into regional and global supply chains. The 2015 forum will provide an opportunity to celebrate the recent reauthorization of AGOA, take stock of its successes over the last 15 years, look to the next 10, and launch a dialogue on our shared vision for the future of U.S.-Africa trade.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The entertainment scene will be ablaze in Harare this weekend with United States artists Toni Braxton and Kenny Babyface Edmonds performing at the Borodo Racecourse Friday evening, while Nigerian artist Davido will perform Saturday at Belgravia Sports Club. Toni Braxton show promoter Benny Bismack of BD Music says all is set for the performance that many have been waiting for so long. Davido's promoter, Patson Chippers Chimboza, says the artist is expected in the country Friday for his performance Saturday.
We are having Davido from Nigeria. He's coming to Zimbabwe on Friday at 12 noon. He's performing at the Belgravia Sports Club the next day, Saturday, 29 August.
But Davido is coming at a time when you also have US-based artist Toni Braxton and Babyface. Is this not going to clash with your event?
Not really. Davido and Toni Braxton have got different appeal. Davido appeals to the young generation and Toni Braxton appeals to the old generation. Besides, they are also performing on different dates. Davido is going on August, Toni Braxton is going on.
What is the cost of getting into Davido's show, and is he also going to have local artists supporting him?
Advance tickets are $10, at the gate will be $20, and they also got the VIP for $50, and the VVIP $800. They've got local artists also performing alongside Davido. We've got Rocky and So Africa. We also have got a lineup of DJs, namely DJ Savo, DJ Tax, Radis, Otis Forever, and Ash Tiles.
Tell us a little bit about Davido. Who is he, and what are his most popular hits?
Davido is a young artist from Nigeria. He recently won the MT Awards. Davido sings hip-hop, and I'm sure Zimbabweans like hip-hop. And it's the first time him performing in Zimbabwe. So I'm sure everyone would want to come and watch Davido perform live in Zimbabwe.
And where can people get the tickets to attend your show?
The tickets are being sold from Chicken Slice outlets in Harare and All Star outlets in Harare from Friday 8 a.m.
Stay tuned for Studio 7 Live Talk at 8:30 p.m. when our host will lead discussions about the hunger situation in the country.
And now to recap today's top stories.
The World Food Program launches a $56 million appeal to raise funds to feed about 850,000 of the estimated 1.5 million Zimbabweans are facing starvation this year.
Bulawayo residents throng the streets in their thousands to bid farewell to the late Warriors and Highlanders football club legend Willard Mawi Kumalo.
And some Bulawayo-based Mandela Washington Fellowship fellows share experiences with potential young African Leaders Initiative candidates.
That's our broadcast this evening.
Now stand by for Studio 7 in Ndebele. This is Chris Gande in Washington, D.C.
And I'm Jonga Kandemiri, wishing you a pleasant evening and a very good night.